You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Shh! Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes! I'm Marika, no mai, haramai, hoki mai, ki me and all my homies love native manu. I te rā nei, today we are talking about the kuaka, the bar-tailed godwit, and I'm just going to play a call for you guys now. And that is the call of the godwit, such a beautiful bird, the bar-tailed godwit, the kuaka. And here to talk with me today about Te Kuaka is ex-dock worker, conservation icon, bird enthusiast, and my homie Pete Tonder. Welcome, Pete. How are you?
Maureen, I love you. Talking me up a bit there.
I just always
it's good to be here.
Got to gas you up, bro. So, today we're going to be talking about Te Kuaka, which is a pretty auspicious bird for Māori, has often been called the bird of mystery. And we came across, in our research this week, we came across a couple of whakatauke, in particular Kukite Te Kohanga Kuaka, who has seen the nest of the kuaka, and also Kōwai Kakite I Te Hua o Te Kuaka, who has ever held the egg of the kuaka. And Pete, can you just give me a bit of background behind that? Why does no one see the nest or the eggs?
Yeah, good question. No one sees the nest or the eggs because they don't breed in Aotearoa.
Yeah.
And they breed up in Western Alaska.
Whoa, this bird is crazy. And then also we had some other Mātauranga Māori. The kuaka is also believed to be the son of Karahi. And Karahi is the grandson of Tangaroa. And so Karahi and his partner Koitada are the parents of all seabirds that fly in flocks. And then another couple of whakatauke we came across, Kangau, ki te tūri, kakao, te paringa o te tai, e tika, te rere o te kuaka. And can you explain what that means, Pete?
That's the spin effects.
What the hell is a spin effect?
Spin effects, when you go to the beach, there are those spiky little things that roll and fly in the wind, and they just keep rolling down the coastline.
Okay.
And so that's the way they spread their seeds.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Yeah. And what is that whakatauke talking about?
So it sort of translates to the spin effects wanders like the incoming tide, but the kuaka flies direct.
Yeah.
And that references their incredible migration journey, which we'll have a kōrero about.
Yeah, we're going to get into that soon. And then the final whakatauke that we came across was ko te kaupapa waka ki te moana hoi, ai ko te kahui atua ki te rangarere ai. Whilst the fleet of canoes over the ocean are paddled, the flocks of gods are above in the heavens flying. And do you want to talk to that, Pete?
Yeah, so from my research, there's a theory that the migration of the kuaka could have helped Māori travel to Aotearoa. Often they followed birds. They knew if birds were going a certain direction, they'd end up landing somewhere on land. So I think that's kind of one of the possibilities of how early Māori migrated through to Aotearoa.
Yeah, which just speaks to the beautiful connection that tangata whenua here in Aotearoa have with te taiao, with the environment. Maybe we should go straight into the migration stuff now, Pete. What do you reckon?
Ka pai.
Because I feel like that is the main thing that we want to talk about here.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about their migration? Because this is a pretty epic journey they go on. Yeah,
this is the biggie. So, just in terms of describing the manu, I just talk about amazing resilience,
yeah,
incredible adaptability, and they're just a little bit bonkers. And this refers to the migration because they spend our winter in Western Alaska and they breed there. And then in September, about this time, they decide they're going to fly to Aotearoa. And that's a straight line from Alaska to Aotearoa. It's about 12,000 kilometres.
I can't get over this.
And it's a straight line and it's non-stop.
Yeah.
They fly for 8 to 9 days, continuous flying.
Yeah.
And it's sort of believed that they use the sun and the moon and the stars and maybe magnetic fields to navigate their way. But yeah. I guess once they've done the journey a few times, they've got a little internal
they've
map.
They've got it on lock.
Their GIS locked in.
No GPS here needed, whānau.
So I think they make the longest migration by far of any bird species.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And what you were also saying is, well, when they come to Aotearoa, where do they come to?
Oh, they spread around a lot of the coastal estuarine-type areas. There's a big population at Pukorokoro, Miranda, Firth of Thames, the Kaipara and the Manukau harbours, and the Paringaringa harbour up north. That has quite big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And there are quite a few at Farewell Spit at the top of Te Waipounamu, the
yeah.
South Island.
Shout out.
And I see them at Port Waikato yeah, as well.
Your favourite place. And also I was just down in Te Waipounamu for a week and saw them at the Heathcote Estuary as well,
yep.
out east Christchurch, which was pretty special.
Yep.
And so, Pete, if they're flying for 8 to 9 days and they're doing it continuously, how are they? Are they sleeping along the way?
Yeah, well, that's I found this astounding when I kind of researched
yeah.
it. They've got this ability to practice unihemispheric sleep during flight.
Which is something you and me are going to try do, eh?
I think I've done this during my during my lectures. Didn't go so well for me. But what they do is they shut down half of their brain. And
what?
So half their brain just has a kip. And the other half of the brain is alert and, you know, watching what's going on and navigating. And then they kind of just switch over. And so they have this ability to have half sleep of half their brain. And go figure, how does that work? And then the other thing they do is they have these micro sleeps.
Okay,
and
how does
so
that work?
They stop flying for a moment, they just glide for like 2 or 3 seconds and they fall asleep. For
and
2 or 3 seconds, and then they wake up and they keep flapping their wings and fly. So the combination of those things, they
wow.
cumulatively have enough rest to get through the 8 to 9 days.
That is just crazy. If you've just tuned in, whānau, we're talking about the kuaka, which is the bar-tailed godwit. It migrates here from Western Alaska to Aotearoa every September. And you'll see it in your kind of estuary areas and intertidal areas. And so we're just talking about their amazing migration journey right now. And so they spend here, they just hang out here over the summer, they're chilling.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And so the idea is they come here to feed and fatten up, really.
Yeah.
And
me too.
Over summer. Summer
feed
feasting.
And fatten up.
And so they put on about another 60% of body weight over
wow.
the summer.
Wow. And so are they coming here because the kai is here?
I guess so. But if I was a kuaka, I'd kind of be I'd look for food a bit closer to home, really.
Yeah,
but that's
pretty,
what they do.
Pretty dedicated to fly 9,000
yeah.
kilometers.
And so they feed on marine worms and small crabs and little shellfish.
Yeah.
Sometimes they go into muddy paddocks and
yeah,
and fish
yes.
out some worms and grubs and stuff.
Yeah. And so then when they're done, like, they hang out here in the summer. They're having their relax feeding time. And then do they go back up to up north to Alaska?
They start migrating back in early March.
Yeah.
And it sort of, from what I understand, happens throughout March. But they do a bit of a dogleg. So they don't fly direct. They do a dogleg to the Yellow Sea. That's around Japan, Korea, China, in terms of the coastal areas.
Yep.
And so they hang out in those sort of coastal mud flats and they fatten up for a couple of weeks and get enough energy to then carry on to Western Alaska. And I think they do that because coming direct on their journey to Aotearoa, there's favourable wind currents and they pick those out so they can do that straight line.
Yeah.
But I think going back, it's a bit harder work, so they do that dog leg.
It's got to take a break. Yeah, wow, that's so interesting. And an amazing journey that they go on. And I was just thinking about it, you know, like no other species, well, that I have come across flies that far. And, you know, I think about humans complaining about their 18-hour flight to, I don't know, New York, or something. I'm like, this is nothing compared to the kuaka. And, Pete, I just wanted to ask you, so they're a migratory bird. Are they native or are they endemic?
They're native.
They're native, yeah.
You wouldn't call them endemic because they endemic birds just hang out in Aotearoa. And they're only found in Aotearoa, whereas these birds, you know, they spend half their time up in Alaska.
Yeah.
So they're native, but migratory.
Cool, yeah. And what we didn't talk about last time but we wanted to talk about was the, kind of their conservation status, I guess?
Yeah, they're, what have we got here? They're at risk declining.
Yeah.
So they lose about 2% of their population per year. And there's about 75,000 that migrate each year.
Mm-hmm.
But the
75,000?
Yeah, there's quite a few of them.
That's so many.
it's a big whānau.
That's bigger than my hometown of Timaru.
And the reason for their decline is primarily due to the pressures of development around the Yellow Sea.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of urban and farming development, you know, turning wetlands and estuarine areas into developed areas.
Yeah.
And but there's been some good work by the New Zealand government and
in conjunction with whānau who live around the
The governments. And the Pukurukuru Miranda Naturalist Trust, based down the Firth Thames, they do a lot of good work.
Yeah.
And if you want to see migrating birds in numbers, that's an awesome place to go and visit.
Yeah, definitely. And so if people were looking out for them, Pete, what do they look like?
They're a fairly large wading bird. They're about 40 centimetres long. They've got a wingspan of about 70 to 80 centimetres.
Yeah.
The brown and grey plumage with a sort of cream underbelly. They've got long, slightly upturned bills, which are pink at the top end and sort of darker black at the end.
Is the upturned bill for anything in particular?
It's not much of a curve.
Okay.
It just helps them digging out crab holes and stuff like that. And when they breed, the males get a very strong sort of reddy brown colour. So they change colour quite a bit during breeding.
Oh, wow.
But that sort of happens up in Alaska.
And I was also reading Māori have kind of splits kuaka into three categories. So we have what you're talking about, the red type, which is called kura. We have the whiter bird, which is called karoro. And then the older bird, which can be called either kakao, hakakao, or rakakao. So that's a bit of a tongue twister for you.
The other thing is that the tails at the end have this dark band across them.
Yes.
And that's why they've got the English name of the bar-tailed godwit.
Yes. And we couldn't find anything about the name Kuaka in particular, but if anyone's got any knowledge about the Kuaka and what that name means, like, please send it through. We'd love to know. And I guess the other thing I wanted to ask Pete, well, we're getting to the end of this, but what are some other threats to the Kuaka?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about when you go to the beach, particularly if you're a dog owner, and, you know, down at Port Waikato, I often see people letting their dogs off and the dogs chasing the wading birds, and it looks like harmless fun, and the dogs are never going to catch the manu. They're going to fly away. But the downside is that every time the manu have to fly away from the dogs, they're using up energy. They're burning up fat.
Yep.
And so it's really crucial that they put as much condition on to make that incredibly long migration journey. And if they don't put enough condition on, a few of them just run out of energy and they drop into the ocean and they drown. So just keep a thought. Either have your dog on the leash or avoid those areas. Or if you see groups of birds on the foreshore, just walk, do a wide berth so they don't have to get up and fly away.
Exactly. Everything is connected. We're all connected to nature, whānau, and we need to do our part to protect it. And finally, Pete, we wanted to talk about our Bird of the Year.
Yes.
Our picks for this year. So if you don't know whānau, Bird of the Year is an event that happens every year, and you can vote for your top five favourite birds, and it kind of decides who, well, where funding gets put for those birds, right? Is that right? I think
that's a good theory, Liv.
Yeah.
But it gives good profile to those manu.
Yeah, so what were your picks, Pete, for Bird of the Year?
I'll just say that the voting closes Sunday, 28th of September, so it's not far away.
Four days.
You just go to the birdoftheyear.org.nz website, that's Forest and Bird. And it gives you a list of birds to choose from. And so you can choose up to five. Each one's got one point for it.
Yeah.
I really wanted the karuhiruhi, the pied shag.
You love the shags.
Because I love the pied shag.
Yeah.
But that wasn't on the list this year. So I went with another.
Come on, Doc. What
another
are you
one
doing?
Of my spirit birds. So the kahu.
Yeah.
Love the kahu.
Yeah.
The takapu, which is the Australasian gannet.
Mm-hmm.
The ruru, another spirit bird for me.
Yeah.
The butangitangi, which is the paradise shell duck. They are such hard case ducks. I love them.
Oh, my gosh.
And then lastly, the tohoi, the little silver eye, which
love that.
I sort of feed through the winter and they hang about me and
they
seem to like me, yeah.
Oh, well, at least you've got some friends. That's good, eh? Awesome picks, Pete. And for me, when I was picking some birds out, I was like, I have to rip Te Waipouna Muhard. I'm from the South Island, but in particular I have to rep my favourite ecosystem in the South Island, which is the Braided River system. So I've only got three picks really. I'm still coming up with a couple more, but I've got the Kaki, which is the black stilt, which is very critically endangered. I've got the Tarapiruhi, which is a black-fronted tern. And the Ngutu Pade, which is the rye bill, and that's also really critically endangered because people drive their stupid cars on the riverbed. Don't do that, guys. you've got a road, you drive your car there. Anyway, those are our picks. And you had a couple more things you wanted to say, Pete? A shout out, perhaps?
Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to conservation scientists. You know, I think they're often unsung heroes. Mm. The conservation work we need to look after these manu, it needs a huge amount of science and research. And I've never met a more sort of dedicated, passionate group of people. And it's more than a job, it's like a calling.
Absolutely.
And they do incredible long hours. They don't get paid that well.
Yeah.
So they should get paid more.
Yep.
And
anyone listening with money, send your money to the conservation scientists.
So I just wanted to give a shout out for them because I think they do an incredible job.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. That's awesome. And you've also picked a song for us today. Yes. What song have you picked for us?
I have picked one of my favourite songs by Aldous Harding, The Barrel. Really interesting lyrics. You make what you want from the lyrics. It's deliberately ambiguous but intriguing. So it's an awesome song and it's got a wonderful music video. So that's my song for the week.
Cool.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. This has been our kōrero about the kuaka. Thanks for coming in, Pete. See you next week.
See ya. Ka kite.
You have the dove, I'm not getting wet.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B-card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.